నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. హరి కృష్ణ. టుడే వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 8 చాప్టర్ 20. బలి మహారాజ్ సరెండర్స్ ద యూనివర్స్. టెక్స్ట్ నెంబర్ 1. శ్రీ శుకవాచ బలి ఏవం గృహపతి కులాచార్యేణ భాషితః తుష్ణిం భూత్వా శణం రాజన్ ఉవాచ వహితో గురుం. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసీ భక్తివేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీ ప్రభుపాద్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్. శ్రీ సుఖదేవ్ గోస్వామి సెడ్, ఓ కింగ్ పరీక్షిత్, వెన్ బలి మహారాజ్ వాజ్ దస్ అడ్వైస్డ్ బై స్పిరిచువల్ మాస్టర్ శుక్రాచార్య, his family priest, he remained silent for some time, and then after full deliberation he replied to his spiritual master as follows. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Bali Maharaj remained silent at a critical point. How could he disobey the instruction of Shukracharya, his spiritual master? It is the duty of such a sober personality as Bali Maharaj to abide by the orders of his spiritual master immediately, as his spiritual master had advised. But Bali Maharaj also considered that Shukracharya was no longer to be accepted as a spiritual master, for he had deviated from the duty of a spiritual master. According to Shastra, the duty of the guru is to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. If he is unable to do so and instead hinders the disciple in going back to Godhead, he should not be a guru. Guru na satsyat, Bhagavatam 5.5.18. One should not become a guru if he cannot enable his disciple to advance in Krishna consciousness. The goal of life is to become a devotee of Lord Krishna so that one may be freed from the bondage of material existence. Tyaktva deham punarjanma Naiti Mameti Swarjuna. The spiritual master helps the disciple attain this stage by developing Krishna consciousness. Now Shukracharya had advised Bali Maharaj to deny the promise to Vamandev. Under the circumstances, therefore, Bali Maharaj thought there would be no fault if he disobeyed the order of his spiritual master. He deliberated on this point. Should he refuse to accept the advice of his spiritual master, or should he independently do everything to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He took some time. Therefore, it is said, Tushnim bhutva shanam rajam uvacha vaito gurum. After deliberating on this point, he decided that Lord Vishnu should be pleased in all circumstances, even at the risk of ignoring the guru's advice to the contrary. Anyone who is supposed to be a guru but who goes against the principle of Vishnu Bhakti cannot be accepted as a guru. If one has falsely accepted such a guru, one should reject him. Such a guru is described as follows. Mahabharata Udyoga 179.25. Gurur api avilaptasya karya karyam ajanatah utpatta pratipannasya parityago vidhiyate. Srila Jiva Goswami has advised that such a useless guru, a family priest acting as guru, should be given up, and that the proper bona fide guru should be accepted. Shat karmo nipuno vipro mantra tantra visharada avaishno guru nasyat vaishnava swapacho guru. A scholarly brahmana, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava. But if a person born in a family of a lower caste is a Vaishnava, he can become a spiritual master. Padma Puran. Shri Sukhdev Goswami said, O King Krishna, seek blessings of all the Vaishnavas present here. It's a difficult, difficult topic to speak on. Rejecting one's guru if he is not guiding you on the path of Krishna consciousness. We are seeing this wonderful section here of Bali Maharaj on the crossroads, where he is now promised Srila Vamandev that he will give whatever he requires from him. And Shukracharya is ill-advising him not to do so. And this particular translation mentions that how Bali Maharaj had no doubt about it, that he is ever going to fulfill all these ill advices of his spiritual master Shukracharya. He was fully inclined to satisfy Vamandev, but yet, as a great soul, he is deliberating. He wants to do even apparently good thing, but in a good thing of rejecting his so-called guru. But knowing that Shukracharya has contributed so much in his life, at one point of time, you know that this section has begun, which says that Shukracharya had invited Mayadhanav, and through that, Bali Maharaj was killed initially in the battle of demons and the demigods. He was revived. His life was revived. So Bali Maharaj knows the contribution of Shukracharya in his life. So therefore, Bali Maharaj wants to refuse him, but he is not point blankly refusing him. He is deliberating. How I can do this difficult job of refusing Shukracharya? And therefore, he is taking his time. But in his mind, he is very clear. He is going to surrender to Krishna, Srila Vamandev. And this section also brings out forth a very wonderful point of how Krishna arranges such situation in one devotee, in a devotee's life, where he is on crossroads and he has to surrender to Krishna. And that makes a devotee a better devotee. So Bali Maharaj, I think so, if this section would have never happened in history, we would have never known of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is actually would have ill known as a demon, king of demons. Not just demon, king of demons. But because of this section, Vamandev came and there was reversals in the life of Bali Maharaj. He was tested thoroughly and he came out, he passed the test. And that made him very prominent. And in fact, I know that I feel that this Bali Maharaj name is even familiar to people who are not even Krishna conscious. People know about Bali Maharaj, that how he had surrendered to Vamandev. Vamandev took everything away from him. In the land of India, at least everyone knows about the story of Bali Maharaj. And some people in Kerala, they also celebrate a festival. Of course, they do not know surrender and all those things. But the point is, people know about Bali Maharaj. So the nine processes of devotional service, the last one, Atma Nivedanam, the example is Bali Maharaj. But he had to go through a big test, rejecting his own so-called guru, who was actually was indebted to his guru. But through this whole test, Bali Maharaj came out with flying colors. His devotional service shone out brightly. So, a reversal in devotee's life is always useful. That time the devotee may be troubled, but the later stage, in the later stages, the devotee comes out with more, with his devotional service at a more purer level, more deeper level. I was hearing a class long back of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and he was giving a very wonderful example that how, if a person has a headache, and he was referring a medicine, I don't remember whether this medicine is there in India, he was mentioning a medicine called Solbitol. And he was mentioning that when a person is having a headache, doctor prescribes Solbitol. And when he takes the medicine, what happens? Immediately his headache increases. So he has taken a medicine from doctor to reduce his headache. But that medicine, after inhaling the medicine, taking the medicine, the headache has increased. And he was mentioning, when the headache increases, it shows the medicine is working. And he was mentioning, doctors say that when the medicine goes in the body system, it opens all the blood arteries and all these veins, and the blood gushes in. And because the blood rushes in the head also, therefore the head feels more heavier. But in due course of time, the headache will be gone. But the headache is increased by taking the medicine. So that is the point. So there are so many examples we hear from Bhagavatam of how reversals are good in devotees' life. I also heard this example, a biblical story about how Jesus was once approached by one of his disciples. And his disciple had a problem of he was very emaciated. He could not eat properly. Anything he would eat, nothing would be retained by the body. So then he told his disciple that since you are emaciated, so what is the, I mean, if someone goes and asks a solution from any Tom, Dick, Harry or layman that I am very emaciated, I am very thin, what should I do? Immediate solution will be take more prasad, add some ghee, something like that. But Jesus told him fast, fast for 20 days. And you are surprised, I am already emaciated. If I had to fast for 20 days, I would not last also. So apparently it looked like a contradictory instruction. But somehow he persisted and he fasted for 20 days. And after 20 days of fasting, he came back to Jesus and Jesus told him that, okay, now you get a glass of milk mixed with honey and all dry fruits. But don't drink, just keep it near your mouth. Or 20 days of fasting, he has to just keep it near his mouth. And the fragrance of honey and the milk, and of course his hunger is also now getting more and more, fire is now increasing. And he has been told to wait, not drink it. And he is perturbed why such an apparent contradictory instructions are given by Jesus. But he waits, and in due course of time, he feels that something is crawling inside his stomach. And ultimately that thing is coming out slowly, slowly. And eventually, the reason for his emaciation was he had a lot of worms in his stomach. A tapeworm was there. And that tapeworm, he was hungry for 20 days also. He had not taken anything. And when he smelled the fragrance of that honey, so he was attracted to that honey, that milk. So slowly, slowly, the tapeworm came out. From the mouth, it came out. It removed. So apparently, it looked like he was emaciated and was told to fast. But in due course of time, those instructions which were very confusing, not known, not properly understood, but followed as a matter of fact, it resulted in good for him. Recently, some of the devotees in our temple ashram, they went to South India for advance party because now so many devotees are coming for the yatra. So booking has to be done now only, 7-8 months before. So I remember Nityanpo had gone with his devotees and he had taken us to one temple very close to Srirangam. Very beautiful story of this temple. Lord Vishnu lying down on the bed of Anantashesha. And the story goes like this, that once Indra, he by mistake was, he committed some mistake. And a small mistake, but Durvasa Muni was on the other side. And he was so angry on this mistake that he cursed him that he will get a Brahma Hatya Shap. That means as the curse, the repercussion will be as big as the killing of a Brahmana. So Indra, here in this story, Indra was a great devotee. He made a mistake, but he was repenting. He was feeling very guilty. Apparently, almost every time we see Bhagavatam or some Puranas, we see Indra making mistakes. So, but we should know that we are not referring to same Indra again and again. You know, like for example, if someone says that President of America, he is always having scandal. So a citizen of America may ask, okay, which president talking about? 10 years back, I read in paper that this president of America had a scandal. Oh, 10 years back. 10 years back, president of America was so-and-so. But today, president of America is so-and-so. He is not like that, maybe. So we are referring Indra's story, but it is not the same Indra we are referring. We are referring Bhagavatam and Puranas, which speaks about millenniums, different millenniums. So sometimes Indra are very good devotees also. In this case, this Indra we are referring as a very good devotee, genuine devotee, very repentant. He went back to Durvasa Muni, immediately offered obeisances and prayed, how I can relieve myself of this curse. And Durvasa told him that you have to feed 100 Brahmanas, Brahmana Bhojan. So Indra was happy, no problem. It's not a big thing for Indra. But again, something wrong happened. Indra invited many, not 100, many, more than 100 Brahmanas. But when the Brahmana Bhojan time came, only 99 came. One was missing. So Indra was thinking, what is this? And I was supposed to feed 100 Brahmanas. Only 99 Brahmanas have come. And he was praying very much to Lord Vishnu, please help me. So Lord Vishnu becomes very much moved and he comes himself as a Brahmana. And he sits in the line. And because he's the 100th Brahmana sitting in the line, he's the first one to be served. But Lord Vishnu wants to test and reveal Indra's devotional service more. So when Lord Vishnu is now the first Brahmana being served, he starts eating everything what is being served. That means people, the servers could not go beyond the first person. Everything he was eating. And Indra was thinking, how can I satisfy 100 brahmanas? And therefore he again offered obeisance to Lord Vishnu and said, Lord Vishnu, if you eat everything, how am I going to satisfy all the 100 brahmanas? And Lord Vishnu said, okay, so you arrange something for me. And if you arrange this thing for me, then I will be happy with you. And then he told him to arrange for a special dish, a South Indian dish. Many of you are familiar with appam. You know appam? Appam is a Kerala dish. Very nice, brownish, round, very sweet to eat. So he told, get me a big stock of appam. And if I eat that, I'll be satisfied. So immediately in a big silver, like kind of a jar, big, huge container, Indra gets appam. And Lord Vishnu eats appam and is satisfied. So that temple, Lord Vishnu, his name is Appakudathan Perumal. Appakudathan Perumal means Lord, and Appakudathan means one who is satisfied by eating appam. Even today, that very silver jar is present next to Lord, and every day in the evening, there is offering of appam to the Lord. His name has come from appam. And in that hole, when he's sleeping on the Anantashesh, his left hand is raised, giving benediction to Indra. So Indra went through all these turmoils, but the result was Indra was glorified and a beautiful deity manifested as one of the 108 Divyadeshams of Sri Sampradaya. So we see that when reversals come, like the reversals which are seen in Bali Maharaj's life, it brought out the devotional fervor of Bali Maharaj. And we can even compare Bali Maharaj. He was asked by Lord Vamandev to surrender. And Shukracharya, who was very closely related to Bali Maharaj was obliged to Shukracharya. And Shukracharya was refusing. Bali Maharaj could have said to Vamandev, I can't do anything because Shukracharya, I am obliged to him, he is my guru. But yet he is refusing. Refusing whom? Shukracharya and surrendering to Vamandev. Take this example vis-a-vis with the example of Karna. Karna also in the same situation. Lord Krishna approaches him and tells him a story that you are the son of Kunti. Come, join the Pandavas. I promise you, you will become the king after Pandavas win the war. And Krishna also promises that if you stick on and become the king, you become the sixth Pandava, then I guarantee you also that Draupadi will accept you as also husband. But Karna says, I can't. Why? Duryodhan. I am obliged to Duryodhan. So Krishna is coming and demanding from Karna, and this foolish person is refusing Karna for a useless Duryodhan. And here is Bali Maharaj. Lord Vaman is coming and approaching him, and Bali Maharaj is showing that how the most important thing is to surrender to Krishna. All his obligations are useless. It's all material. As long as the body is there, obligations are there. And he surrenders to Vamandev. So today we will be covering this topic of pseudo guru. Prabhupada is speaking about how one should reject pseudo guru. So I will first today speak from the Krishna book, a wonderful story about Lord Krishna. And after I speak this pastime, I'll then tell you how this Krishna book pastime relates to this particular section and to this particular purport. So we are referring to the section where Krishna is going to kill the first demon entering Vrindavan. So Krishna book chapter 6 begins like this, where Nanda Maharaj, he has gone to meet Vasudev in Mathura. And Vasudev has told him that he should go back to Vrindavan. Your son may be in danger. So while coming back, Nanda Maharaj is contemplating, why did Vasudev ever say that my son can be in danger? And then he thinks that Vasudev cannot be speaking lies. He is a very intelligent person. And therefore, there should be a danger, maybe upcoming danger. And therefore, he's rushing. But he's thinking, maybe I'll become late. Maybe I cannot reach. And he's sensing a danger in his life, in the life of his child. And Prabhupada says, when a devotee senses danger in his life, what does he do? He takes shelter of Krishna. That is a devotee. So Prabhupada says, Nanda Maharaj, while walking towards Vrindavan, was taking utmost shelter of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a devotee. In an outside person who is non-devotee, he may also look like a pious person taking shelter of Krishna. But his shelter is completely different shelter. Like for example, if someone is in danger, an outside person demands, Krishna, please help me. Please solve my problem. Or someone may say, like for example, a typical thing, you may go, some person may go to temple and may say, oh Krishna, if you fulfill the desire, then I will go do this and this to you. So this is not taking shelter. It's a business. You demand something and you say that I will offer this. But Nanda Maharaj was not demanding anything. He was just taking shelter of Supreme Lord. Whatever you do is best, but I am taking shelter because I am sensing a danger in my life. So while Parikshit Maharaj is narrating this to Sukhdev Goswami is narrating this pastime to Parikshit Maharaj, and is also telling that how on the other side Kamsa has now summoned Putana, and she's a black art witch. She knows the art of killing babies. She's expert in drinking the blood of babies. And Kamsa has called Putana and told, go to Vrindavan and kill Krishna. So Putana has already been, so Parikshit Maharaj has been narrated this thing. So immediately Sukhdev Goswami, when he is narrating to Parikshit Maharaj this incident, he sees Parikshit Maharaj has become so absorbed in hearing this, even he is sensing danger to Krishna. Even the pastime has already taken place long back. But Parikshit Maharaj is so absorbed, while hearing that Putana has been summoned to Vrindavan and Nanda Maharaj is not in Vrindavan, even Parikshit Maharaj is feeling palpitations. Oh, what will happen now? So immediately Sukhdev Goswami could sense it, and as an expert Bhagavatam reciter, he is saying to Parikshit Maharaj, now don't worry Parikshit Maharaj, wherever there is a chanting of the names of Supreme Personality of Godhead taking place, there will be no inauspicious events happening. All this witchcraft and all this will never work, he mentions them. So this is the power of the holy name of the Lord. When the holy name of the Lord is sincerely chanted by devotees, all the negative vibrations do not affect a devotee. And therefore, while Nanda Maharaj was taking shelter of Supreme Lord and running towards Vrindavan, it is mentioned that Putana on this side was approaching Vrindavan. It is mentioned, Srila Prabhupada gives elaborate description of which kind of witch she was. It is mentioned, Prabhupada says that there are many kinds of witches. There are also different varieties and species among them. But this variety of witch, which Putana belonged to, was Khechari. Khechari was such a demoness that she could fly in the air with a stick. That was her power. And she could reach at any place, any time, and she could change her form. So Putana in this way was coming towards Vrindavan. She landed in Vrindavan. And it is mentioned, when she landed in Vrindavan, Putana, she took a very beautiful form. Srila Prabhupada describes elaborately the form of Putana. From how she was such a very dark, ugly looking witch, she became a very handsome, not handsome, but a very, very beautiful looking lady. That she was so beautiful that when she entered Vrindavan, even Vrindavan devotees were captivated by the beauty of Putana. That was the captivating beauty of Putana. When she was walking, everyone was looking at her. It's very difficult. Someone walks, even a beautiful, some beautiful man or woman walks. Not necessarily everyone looks at them. But when Putana was walking, Vrindavan devotees were always engaged in Krishna's service. They left that service and they're looking at Putana. Completely bewitched and bewildered. Why? Prabhupada says because Krishna allowed that to happen. The residents of Vrindavan, they are pure devotees. How they can get bewildered? A pure devotee is never bewildered. He is never put into illusion. But it has happened in the case of the Vrindavan devotees because Krishna's pastime potency was working there. And therefore it let the Vrindavan devotees also get absorbed and bewildered by the beauty of Putana. And Putana was just keeping, she was just walking inside the interiors of Vrindavan and no one was objecting. In fact, people were thinking, some people were thinking that she is a goddess of fortune. And the ladies were thinking that we are so fortunate that this beautiful lady has come and she has even blessed Vrindavan. And slowly, slowly she kept on walking and she entered into the house of Nanda Maharaj. In fact, she entered into the private quarters of Nanda Maharaj, inside where Lord Krishna, baby Krishna was lying. So, I was hearing a lecture of Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj in this regard. He was mentioning that in Vedic tradition, generally, a stranger would never go to anyone's house. I mean, if someone comes, you would be asked, who are you? What to speak of someone entering into private inner apartments? And that too, this is a lady. Vedic culture never allowed any lady to go to any house alone. But here, everyone was so bewildered, no one objected her. She kept on going interior and directly into the interior quarters where Krishna was lying. And then Putana saw Yashoda, Rohini, and then she saw in the cradle, baby Krishna. And Prabhupada says, when Putana saw Krishna, she thought, this child is not ordinary. This child is so powerful, Prabhupada says, Putana was thinking, that he can destroy the whole universe immediately. That was the understanding of Putana. Who was Putana? Not a devotee, a demoness. When she saw Krishna, a baby Krishna in the cradle, a child, just seeing Krishna, she could understand, this is not an ordinary child. He can destroy the whole universe. And Prabhupada takes this opportunity and blasts Mayavadis. Prabhupada says, even Putana could understand Krishna's glories. And Mayavadis cannot understand Krishna's glories. Prabhupada says that there is a group of anthropomorphists who say that there is no God. This Krishna God, you made, all of us made Krishna as God. He is a very powerful person. So by democratic vote, you know, everyone agreed together, so someone has to be God, and he looks to be more fitting. Krishna was made God. That is what anthropomorphists say. But Prabhupada says, see, even Putana knew, God is always God, even when he is in the cradle. Even when he is a child, he is all powerful. God does not require some meditation classes, some crash courses to become God. Krishna never went for some crash courses. Krishna was God from the first day. Putana knew that. Prabhupada says the Mayavadi is the impersonalist. They try to deride Krishna. And they say Krishna is formless, he is not powerful. Ultimate, the formless is most important. And Prabhupada says this is bogus. Even Putana could understand. There is Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead sleeping there. And he can become my kal, my time. I have to be careful. So therefore, the whole idea is Prabhupada takes all opportunity to blast Mayavadis. That is Prabhupada. He was a powerful guru. He was not like Shukracharya, trying to dissuade his disciple from Krishna. But any opportunity he will blast. Prabhupada says by condemning and criticizing Mayavadis and defeating them, you will make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is criticizing Mayavadis, that how Mayavadis are so useless that even Putana is better than a Mayavadi. So, and the whole logic is so useless that how can you glorify absolute truth by saying that he is a formless? Like for example, I was hearing a class of Shyamananda Thurya mentioning that if you approach a very beautiful person and if you have to glorify him and if you say that you are so beautiful, you don't have hair, you don't have eyes, you don't have ears, you don't have hands, is that glorification? Similarly, when you approach to absolute truth and you say, you don't have hand, you are formless, it's not glorification, it is condemning. So therefore, exact glorification you can learn from Vaishnava Acharyas. So now, when Krishna is sleeping, Krishna is there, and Krishna also knows Putana has come, and Putana is thinking, oh, this is not ordinary child. So, Krishna, when Putana started coming closer to Krishna, it is mentioned Krishna closed his eyes. And our Srila Prabhupada mentions five reasons, different reasons given by different acharyas, why Krishna closed his eyes when Putana approached her. The first reason Krishna Prabhupada tells is that Prabhupada says that Krishna closed his eyes because he did not like to see the face of Putana. Because Putana, she had a track record of killing so many innocent babies. Such a gruesome character was coming in front of Krishna. Krishna did not want to even see the face of that personality. So Krishna had closed his eyes. The second is, Prabhupada says that when Putana was approaching Krishna, the conscience which was there in Putana was dictating to Putana that this is not an ordinary baby. And it looked like she may become less confident in her approach to Krishna. Krishna did not want that to happen. So Krishna closed his eyes to avoid that eye-to-eye contact so that Putana can become more confident and very easily approach and pick up Krishna. That is the reason Krishna closed his eyes. The third reason, Prabhupada says, is Krishna appears in this world to kill demons and protect devotees. As he says in Gita, Paritranaya sadhunam. So, and Krishna had to kill demons. And Krishna was thinking, oh, I have to kill demons. And look, who's the first demon to be killed? A lady. And Prabhupada says, according to Vedic rules, the killing of woman, killing of a brahmana, killing of a cow, a child, is forbidden. And Krishna is saying, I have to kill this demon. But this demon, the first demon I have to ever kill, is a lady. So Krishna is not happy. So he could not help, so he closed his eyes, Prabhupada says. And the fourth reason Prabhupada says is, Krishna closed his eyes because Krishna did not see what Putana represented. Krishna just saw that Putana is coming to feed him. So Krishna took Putana as a nurse. So that she is coming, a young lady is coming, approaching me and wants to caress me and nurture me. So Krishna saw the only brighter side of Putana. And therefore he felt very comfortable. And when a child is very comfortable, or anyone is comfortable, he feels, then he might close his eyes because he's sensing no danger now, like that. So Krishna closes his eyes. And the fifth reason Prabhupada says is, as per the Vedas, there are seven kinds of mother, we all know. That is, one's real mother, Guru Patni, the wife of a king, wife of a brahmana, the mother cow, the nurse and the mother earth. And here was Putana, who came in the form of a nurse. She wanted to feed Krishna her milk. So she came as a nurse. So as per Vedic injunction, she becomes a mother. And Krishna is feeling, oh, I have to kill my own mother here now. And therefore Krishna closes his eyes. Those are the five reasons Prabhupada says that why Krishna closed his eyes. However, Srila Prabhupada says that now when Krishna is closing his eyes so that he could kill Putana, we should know Krishna's killing of his mother Putana is same as Krishna having his loving pastimes with his other mother Yashoda. They are both on absolute level. They are not different. One should not feel Putana got lesser of what Krishna gave to mother Yashoda. No. Absolute level, Krishna was actually delivering both of them. By performing pastime with mother Yashoda, Krishna was delivering mother Yashoda. And by performing pastime with Putana, killing her, Krishna was delivering Putana. Putana in fact got liberation by this activity. And in this way, Putana became very confident. She took Krishna in her lap. And then it is mentioned when she was taking Krishna in her lap, she was feeling that is the ordinary child now. And Prabhupada says, Putana was taking a snake in her lap, thinking the snake to be an ordinary rope. Now if you take a snake as an ordinary rope, will the snake behave like a rope? No, snake will behave like a snake. It will bite. So Putana took the child Krishna as an ordinary child now. But he was not ordinary. He was time personified for her. And therefore Krishna will work as time personified for her. Now when Putana was lifting Krishna, it is mentioned, neither Yashoda, neither Rohini, any of them objected to this. I mean, a strange lady comes to the house and goes and picks up the baby. And no one knows who this lady is. Why? Because even Yashoda and Rohini, they were completely convinced that this lady has come to do good for our child. In fact, they were thinking, maybe in our house, goddess Ambika has come, Parvati Devi. Or maybe they were thinking, Indra's wife Sachi has come. Or maybe goddess's fortune has come. So in this way, they were very happy, willingly, they allowed Putana to lift Krishna. So Putana kept Krishna on her lap and immediately she started feeding Krishna milk. Now Krishna, when Putana approached Krishna and Krishna was put on the lap, Krishna became angry and he was more ready to drink the milk than Putana was ready to provide milk to Krishna. Why Krishna was angry? Krishna was not angry that this lady has come to feed me poison. But Krishna was angry because this lady in the past has killed so many babies. And therefore Krishna wanted to somehow close the chapter of Putana immediately. And therefore he was now angry that I want to stop this nefarious activities of this lady. And therefore I want to kill him. Immediately Krishna became angry and was ready to do what is needful. And then it is mentioned that Krishna first sucked the milk of Putana. Because that's what Putana represented. She wanted to feed milk to Krishna. Putana had also put poison on her breast. And therefore Krishna had first drank the poison, then drank the milk. which both Putana wanted to offer both of them. And finally, Krishna kept on sucking and finally sucked out the very life air of Putana. And it is mentioned that Putana, when her life air was sucked, Putana felt such an excruciating pain. I mean, she was getting purified in a very fast manner. I mean, from a demoness who was bound to be going to nether regions for killing so many children, drinking their blood, and in a matter of time, she is to be posted in Golok Vrindavan. So the time gap is very less for purification. So you can imagine, lesser the time, more intense will be the purification. And that intense purification Putana experienced. It is mentioned, Prabhupada says, as she died, she was screaming loudly. And this screaming was not just, she was only screaming. That screaming affected the whole universe. There was a tremendous vibration both on earth and the sky because of this screaming. People thought that thunderbolts are falling from the sky. It is mentioned that when Putana, it is mentioned she assumed her gigantic form and she fell down. She was 12 miles long. And when she fell down, her body is described here. Her fallen body was extending up to 12 miles. She smashed all the trees on which she fell down and nearby, all the trees, to pieces. And then her teeth appeared like plowed roads, like highways. Many lane highways, white highways. And her nostrils appeared like mountain caves. Her chest appeared like small hills. And her hair was like washed reddish bush. Big bush, reddish bush. Her eye sockets were like blind wells. And her two thighs appeared like banks of a river. Her two hands appeared like nicely constructed bridges in Vrindavan. In this way, this is a ghastly description of Putana. So when she died, she was screaming and she was throwing out her hands and legs. Like small child, when a small child cries and demands something, he throws out his legs, you know. You will never find an adult doing it. But here is a Putana, a well-grown adult. Can you imagine what kind of intense purification she went to? She could not do anything. She was screaming. She was moving all her bodily limbs. And finally, her life air came out. So it is mentioned by our acharyas that when Krishna was sucking the life air of Putana, Krishna was sucking very gradually. Because Krishna knew if he immediately sucked out the life air of Putana, Putana might assume the gigantic size within the house of Nanda Maharaj. And what will happen? Nanda Maharaj's house and the whole Vrindavan will be destroyed. 12 miles long. Putana falling in Vrindavan. So he allowed Putana some time so that Putana, in that excruciating pain, move out of the house of Nanda Maharaj and move more further and further away from Vrindavan. And at a point, it is mentioned by Acharya, is that when Putana fell down at the place which was actually Garden of Kamsa, and all the trees in the Garden of Kamsa were smashed to pieces. So Krishna knows when exactly what to do. He is perfect timer in his things. And when it is mentioned Putana died, then Nanda Maharaj came. And Nanda Maharaj's simplicity is so amazing. He is surprised that how can you allow such a huge personality in the house and give your child. He is angry on Mother Yashoda. He's so simple. He's not thinking that, you know, that she has changed her form and she becomes a beautiful lady. He's thinking that he's already sensing danger. He's running and he's seeing a huge body. And he's thinking, seeing Krishna there on the body. And he makes one and one, two of it. And he says, how can you do it like this? What kind of mother you are? You know, how can you allow such a gruesome lady come inside your house? So that is simplicity of Nanda Maharaj. And it is mentioned that when Putana is killed, then they decided to immediately chop the body of Putana. Because a snake is killed, it is recommended the snake has to be chopped. Otherwise, the snake may again come back to life. So with that theory, the residents of Vrindavan decided to chop the body of Putana. 12-mile-long body of Putana had to be chopped. And they chopped and they arranged all the wood and they burned the body of Putana. And it's mentioned when they were in the body of Putana, because Putana was touched by Krishna, she was completely purified. Even her body was purified. An aromatic fragrance was coming from the smoke. Generally, if you stand near a smoke, a fire, which is a lot of smoke coming, you cannot stand there for long. But here, devotees in Vrindavan were happy because a pleasant fragrance was coming. So the whole body of Putana, a demoness, her diet was blood and flesh. When the body is burnt, aromatic fragrance. And Prabhupada writes, Acharya's commentary, Prabhupada says that the fragrance was that of aguru, camphor, sandalwood, and all beautiful fragrance substances. So that fragrance, and it was not like some fragrance was coming. Huge, so much fragrance, and you can imagine the body was 12 miles long, so many burning pyres. In fact, all this fragrance, smoke was going, and they're all becoming clouds in the sky of Vrindavan. And it's mentioned, immediately after some time, the clouds, they put forth rains. And the rains which came out were all fragrant waters. So Krishna arranged even that too, through a very bad thing like Putana coming, and Krishna arranged a fragrant rainfall in Vrindavan, even through Putana. So, so therefore in Srimad Bhagavatam it is mentioned that Putana was very, Lord Krishna is so merciful that a person like Putana who came to kill Krishna, but Krishna delivered her. It is mentioned when Putana was killed, a chariot came from Golok Vrindavan for her. And it is described the chariot was studded with diamonds and jewels. Hundreds of devotees of Golok had come to receive her. And they were all doing chamar to Putana in her spiritual body. And in that chariot she went back to Godhead. So our Acharya has mentioned that how Krishna is so merciful that even if a person whose intention was not to serve Krishna, was to poison Krishna, but through the medium of service, even that person, Krishna, saw only positive thing in that. So what to speak of a devotee who actually starts serving Krishna with all of his heart, even though he may not fully capable of doing it, but he does it with heart, proper heart. There is no intention in that. So how much Krishna will benefit? That Krishna is giving the post of a nurse, mother-like position to Putana, almost on the same position as Yashoda and Rohini in spiritual world. Krishna gave that post to Putana. So Putana got that benediction. So Prabhupada says in his Krishna book that what the cows of Vrindavan and what Mother Yashoda got, almost like that Putana also received. So that is a great position which Putana received from being killed by Krishna. Now, one more thing. Now, why I am discussing this particular pastime of Putana here? Well, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a very nice book called as Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrit. And there he speaks about various types of anarthas. And he begins the book by saying that Krishna's pastimes are of two types. One is Nitya Leela and other is Naimittik Leela. Nitya Leela is eternal pastimes and Naimittik Leela is occasional pastimes. So Krishna, when he is in Bhoma Vrindavan, in this Vrindavan on earth planet apparently, he also does Nitya Leela and he also does Naimittik Leela, occasional pastimes which never happen in Golok Vrindavan, which happens here only. And one of them is killing of demons. I mean, in Golok Vrindavan demons don't come. They come here only. So Krishna kills the demon here. That is called Naimittik Leela. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that Krishna comes and does occasional pastimes on earth. Why he does? To teach us something. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares the each demon which comes to Krishna and Krishna kills the demon. Each demon represents an anartha in a devotee. Or an impediment in devotional service of a devotee. Each demon represents. And how Krishna kills them and how one can learn lessons of that. So with that pretext then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur begins in his book, listing various demons and what each demon represents. And Putana here represents a pseudo-guru. So we're discussing on pseudo-guru here now. Prabhupada is speaking of pseudo-guru. So Putana represents pseudo-guru. So this is one link which I found from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's comparison of Putana. That's why we refer this particular section of Krishna book. That is one link. Second link is, we should also know that Putana was none other in her previous life than Bali Maharaj's sister. So Bali Maharaj's sister, when Vamandev approached the arena of Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was completely captivated by the beauty of Vamandev. Even Ratna Mala, the sister of Bali Maharaj, was captivated. And immediately she decided, what if I have a child like this? Then I would feed the child my milk. And immediately Vamandev could understand the desire of Ratna Mala, and immediately Vamandev smiled and agreed for her desire. You will get that position. But later then, when Vamandev increases his size, takes everything from Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj is captivated by Garuda, he's standing unarmed, all of his followers are gone away, everything is taken away from him, and that time Ratna Mala sees Bali Maharaj, and then he sings, if he becomes my child, Vamandev becomes my child, then I will feed him and also kill him. So Vamandev hears that also, and Vamandev says, okay, apparently contradictory desires, but I will arrange for you that thing. That you will come, you will feed me your milk, and you cannot kill me, so you will attempt to kill me. So Ratna Mala later takes the form of Putana. And it is mentioned that she comes and she feeds Krishna, and Krishna arranges that whole pastime, and Krishna elevates her finally, ultimately, to the eternal position of a dhatri, a nurse. So this is a connection. The other connection is pseudo guru. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur very beautifully mentions in this Chaitanya Shikshamrit book how Putana represents pseudo guru. The pseudo guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, may appear in one or both of two forms. Which are the two forms? The first form is actual guru who is deceitful, who may preach in the pretext of spirituality how one should gratify senses, or one who preach in the pretext of spirituality how one should get liberation, or one who may preach both together. That's a pseudo guru. Instead of preaching, teaching his disciple the pure principles of Krishna consciousness, he's telling him how one can get sense gratification, or how can one get moksha. So this is a deceitful pseudo guru. That is the first guru Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about here. And second is one's own material mind. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one's own material mind is also one's deceitful guru, because that material mind is always giving empirical and logical reasonings of how one can surrender to Krishna independently. So you may hear instructions of your own guru or your own senior devotees, and then you may hear your mind saying, no, actually this is good for you. They don't know your position. They are not understanding you. You better act in this way. And it may look like the mind is justifying and saying the right thing. And one may accept the advice of mind. So mind is also compared, a material mind is compared to a pseudo guru. Now Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he elaborates on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's conclusions. And he mentions that, he gives many examples on this. He says that a child, when he is born in this world, he represents innocent, he has an innocent Krishna consciousness in his heart. As we read that in Bhagavatam, that when a child is in the womb, he is praying to come out. And he promises also that I will take shelter of Krishna. So he has an innocent Krishna consciousness dormant in his heart. He comes out. And as soon as he comes out, immediately Bhaktisiddhanta Sadhguru mentions, the parents give the child to educators. Either a pseudo-spiritual teacher or a modern educational system. And modern educational system or pseudo-spiritual guides are compared to Putana. They completely kill Krishna in his heart. So that is the example Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur gives. And then he mentions that Putana has been successful in today's world. Why? Because this Putana has been aided and supported by whom? Organized religion. Today we find in India, many times when you preach to people who are very pious, they cannot take to Krishna consciousness seriously or wholeheartedly, because they already attached to some process. And that process is so run down. But because that attachment is so strong, they cannot immediately take it up. That is called organized religion. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Prabhupada says, organized religion is an attempt to force the people in general to follow certain religious principles without affecting any spiritual advancement. There is no spiritual advancement, just some ritual, some piety. but you are attached to it. It has to be done. Even if advised properly, take to this process, this is a genuine process, no. This is something which we are doing for so long. How can we give up? So this organized religion is helping Putana to remove Krishna, to keep Krishna away from our life. So, like Nityanpu was mentioning to all of us, that in South India, Brahmanical culture is very strong there. People today also respect Brahmanas there very much. But because that, just that respect is there, okay, they have to be respected. But people do not know how to respect or who is a Brahmana. So the whole system has run down so much. He was mentioning that his own hometown, Ramnathpuram, where he came from, people invite Brahmanas, but they do not check also whether there is a real Brahmana or is he following or not. But they invite him. And the custom has become now, over the years, to give him cloth as a dakshina, to give him food grains as dakshina, and also give him a bottle of wine as dakshina. It has become a custom now. Why? Because he likes to drink. So when devotees go and preach, that how can you give this to a Brahmana? And they mentioned, don't know, scriptures mentioned, when you please Brahmana, you please Vishnu. But what he is asking, is he following Brahmanical culture? That I don't know. Shastra says, he is a Brahmana. If you please him, you please Vishnu. So whatever he likes, we'll give. If he likes wine, I'll give wine. So apparently good instructions are given. This organized religion is forcing them not to accept it. That is the problem. So therefore Srila Prabhupada says, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says that therefore real religion has to be established. And that is Krishna consciousness. And once Krishna consciousness is established, what happens? In due course of time, not gradually also, immediately we'll see devotees take up to real religion. We have examples of all our own lives. When we took up Krishna consciousness, immediately a drastic change came. So many things we were following, immediately we gave up. Is it not? And many of our family members were surprised. Hey, this is something going for traditions. Why are you giving up? And we could have never given up. But we came in touch with Krishna consciousness, immediately we gave up. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada says, real religion, when it actually appears, all this pseudo-religion, organized so-called religion, gets swayed away. So Srila Prabhupada's Krishna consciousness movement is such a religion, which when it came, immediately we all could understand what is Krishna consciousness, how religion has to be followed. So many examples are there in Prabhupada's life, that how Prabhupada, he helped. It is mentioned that a bona fide teacher like Srila Prabhupada, when he appears on the scene, immediately, by surrender to Krishna, he makes others also surrender to Krishna. So a bona fide guru compared to a pseudo guru, a bona fide guru is compared to wheel alignment. Like for example, if someone is driving a car, and if you're driving a car, one should know while driving the car, the steering wheel should be aligned with the wheels. If it's not aligned, the whole car will wobble, and it will rattle. It will just keep rattling and there won't be a good, comfortable ride. So when one's spiritual life, which is compared to steering wheel, is aligned with the wheel, wheel is compared to guru's order, then what happens? If it is not aligned, you will feel uncomfortness. Even while practicing 16 round chanting, following four principles, you will not feel satisfaction. Why? Because there is no proper alignment. But as soon as there's proper alignment, what happens? Even on a bumpy road, the car will run very smooth because there is alignment. So when there's proper alignment with the orders of Guru, even in difficult circumstances, a devotee will experience satisfaction. So Prabhupada was such a guru who generated this alignment and gave us this chance. It is mentioned that Prabhupada, Prabhupada is compared to a bona fide guru because he always arranged for surrender of his disciples to Krishna. Like one time Prabhupada was on a on his tour, and he came to a particular city after a very long travel, almost a very big jet lag he had. But as soon as he landed, immediately Prabhupada did not think, give me some rest, jet lag is there. Prabhupada immediately changed his watch to the timing of that particular place. And as per that time, what was his schedule? Okay, now I have to be, this is afternoon here, lunch prasadam has to be there. And then I have to meet some people. Immediately that schedule will start. And in this particular journey where Prabhupada was going, coming to the city, he had four more disciples of him, who were all leaders of the society. So they came and Prabhupada called them immediately after the flight landed. And Prabhupada spoke for hours. Prabhupada first, that was Sunday, so Prabhupada spoke a Sunday lecture. And then Prabhupada called them inside and spoke for hours and hours about glorifying Krishna. And the discussion went on till 11 in the night. Prabhupada had not taken rest and Prabhupada speaking. And all these devotees were tired, jet lag. And now they are dozing also. So Prabhupada could see, no, they are tired. So Prabhupada said, okay, now you go. I think you are sleepy. Feeling sleepy, you should go. So at 11 p.m., Prabhupada told them to go. And they slept. And Shyam Sundar Prabhu, who recollects this incident, he says that I was secretary that time and I heard at 2 p.m. a ring. That means Prabhupada is calling me. And immediately Shyam Sundar Prabhu ran and Prabhupada said, sit down. And Prabhupada again started glorifying Krishna. Prabhupada said, I don't have any work, I have to just glorify Krishna. So Prabhupada's business was there to glorify Krishna. So this was a genuine guru and he encouraged everyone. Even if a person was not even fit, he was very lowly. Prabhupada encouraged him. Like Shyam Sundar Prabhu again mentions about this story. We have a well-known story in our congregation here. He mentions that how once his approach, Srila Prabhupada and told Prabhupada, I have committed a lot of sins. I have to go to jail now. Some apparently made a mistake and in previous, before becoming a devotee, I had to go to jail. And Prabhupada told him, no problem. Krishna was also born in jail. So Prabhupada encouraged him. Krishna was born in jail. No problem going in jail. But Prabhupada, it was a very gruesome sin. You know, Prabhupada, I was dealing with drugs. And Prabhupada said, no problem. I was also dealing with drugs. I had a pharmacy shop. Prayag Pharmacy. So Shyam Sundar was mentioning that how apparently I was showing that I was so unqualified. And Prabhupada was encouraging me, connecting me to Krishna. No problem. Krishna is there. We are there. Take care of it. So in this way, Prabhupada was always in tune with Krishna and was giving Krishna to everyone else. So the first one we discussed was pseudo guru now. The second one we are talking about is mind. Of course, before going to the mind, I remember now one very important thing. In our base where we go and preach, there's one devotee who has just become a devotee. And I had asked him once that how you become a devotee. Then he told me that from birth he was very spiritually minded. And then he told me his journey of how he became a devotee. How he went through different gurus and finally came to Krishna consciousness. And how he stayed in Krishna consciousness, what he saw there. So he told that when he was a very small child, he was a Maharashtrian. So his parents took him to Pandharpur. And they wanted his child to be initiated. Very small baby. Very small child. I'm just about to speak now. You can just speak. And the child was brought to the... So they went and were searching for a sadhu, someone who can give diksha. Somewhere near Pandharpur temple, they saw a man sitting cross-legged. So they went and said, Babaji, please give diksha to my child. So Babaji said, okay, very nice. Where is the mala? So they got the mala. Where is Chandan? Got Chandan also. Okay. And where is the child? Go to the child. Okay, and one more thing is remaining. Where is that? What is that? Where is my dakshina? 50 rupees. So he put chandan on the child, he put mala on the child and said, now he's initiated. And he was coming from Bonaparte Sampradaya actually, in one sense. Because he told, okay, from this day onwards, no meditating, no intoxication, no gambling and no illicit sex for his child. And chant Jai Jai Ram Krishna Hari. But because he was apparently not connected with devotees, he had his own money-making business. So he told, okay, now he is my disciple. So every year, four times you have to come to Pandharpur, take darshan of Vitthal, and then come to take my darshan. And every time you come, you should bring dakshina. So he was mentioning that this is the beginning of my spiritual life. With a guru who was there sitting just for dakshina. And then he told me many things that how he went on his... In his village, there were many other gurus. One was... I should not forget something here. She was mentioning he went to one organization who speaking to trees. So he went to that organization and he told them that I want to surrender to you. And he was told, okay, you chant this mantra, Soham. So how should you chant? You should inhale, So... And when you release your breath, hum. So he was saying that I was more doing a breathing exercise than a mantra chanting. So he became to a very senior devotee in that. Devotee means a senior practitioner in that particular field. And I asked him, you have done sadhana for so long. What did you get from the sadhana? And he said, I have learned the language of animals. I'm thinking, sadhana and learning the language of animals, what is the connection? I mean, after doing sadhana for 10 years, he's apparently learning nothing about Krishna, nothing about God. He's learning language of animals. So this is something which he saw in his organization. And then he remembered that how there was a big conference in Bangalore somewhere, and this main leader came to the conference. He got opportunity to meet him. And he went and asked him, Swamiji, are you God? And this person saw him angrily. He saw him angrily and said, you fool, do you have a doubt? and he thought, this person is cheating me and the whole system is cheating. So he left him, apparently to meet many more gurus in his life. In his village there was one guru who was very well known for giving Bhagavad Kathas. And he was so famous that people were enraptured hearing his katha. But he had a strong addiction of tobacco initially. And he justified also of tobacco eating. How? He told that I get ecstasy to speak Bhagavatam by eating tobacco. And therefore whatever helps in Krishna's service should be accepted. So because he was so very famous and his recitation was so nice, everyone agreed, okay, take it. They completely ignored what he was eating before Bhagavatam class. Before Bhagavatam class, he would chew tobacco. But after some years, tobacco was not giving that kick to him. So he think, what should I do? So he turned to LSD. So started smoking marijuana, LSD. And that too, again, he justified that, no, this is giving higher ecstasies. So to speak Bhagavatam. Apparently, even LSD also stopped working on him. And I was thinking, I'm not getting ecstasy now. What to do? So one day, apparently, while in that distressed state, without getting ecstasy, he was sitting with a Bhagavatam, with a mic. He touched the mic. There was a problem in the earthing in the mic. So he got a shock. When he got the shock, he got that kick. And then it became a regular habit. Before coming to Bhagavatam class, he would touch a live current wire, get that kick, and then sit for Bhagavatam class. It's a true story, it's not a joke. And therefore, his name became Current Baba. Then he met one more person. This person was really genuine. He was into meditation. He would never open his eyes, always close his eyes. But he was saying that how foolish it is that people who don't have parampara, they may take to apparent things which are like very confusing to his disciples also. So this man who was always in meditation, never opening his eyes, so in a very small village in Maharashtra, one day a foreigner came to that village. So all people were seeing, you know, foreigner coming to village. They were surprised. They never saw a foreign personality coming from some abroad countries. So he thought, let us make him meet our guru. So brought him to his guru and told him, Chalo, Nandatmaro. Offer obeisances. I did not know what is offering obeisances. So literally they dragged him down and offered him obeisances. And he got up and the guru opened his eyes and guru asked him, what is your name? And he said, my name is David. And the guru was he became so enlivened by the name David. He said, very nice name, very nice name. Okay, you are my disciple and I'll take your name now. From today onwards, my name will be David Baba. A strange kind of initiation. Guru generally gives initiation to the disciple. Gives the name to disciple. Yeah, he took the disciple's name and took it. So he became a David Baba in that village. And finally this devotee came across, Krishna conscious devotees. And he is saying that how, when I came here, I found that love. He said, everyone is respecting each other. No one is shouting, hey, Idhara. Not like that. No. They were respecting Prabhuji, how are you? Mataji, how are you? A lot of respect was, the culture was there. Even prasadam was actually very divinely offered, meditated. It was not like you said previously people would, other organization, there is prasad. But what prasad? The cook, the kitchen cook would cook some food and he would also eat side by side what has been cooked. If he's making some kela salad, then he would take one kela and keep eating and make salad also. And they'll call it prasad. And then he came to know how prasad is, no one even thinks of eating it before Krishna honors it. And then most important is that he saw that how devotees were so patient. And they were so daring. They had given up so much in their life. No tea, no coffee and all those things. And bad friends, they could easily give up. She was mentioning, when I came, I saw that devotees were so satisfied practicing Krishna consciousness. And they were respecting me. And they would always He said, most important thing is, when I was in other organization, I had to somehow keep myself in the organization. But when I came to Krishna consciousness, I saw, I don't have to do that endeavor. Devotees are more worried that I should be in Krishna consciousness. But that was very amazing experience he had. So this kept him, made him a devotee after seeing all the experience of pseudo gurus. So this is first point. Second point is mind. Regarding mind, Prabhupada says, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur Prabhupada says, that we'll just end here now. We finished almost everything. Okay. Yeah. Regarding how to control the mind, which is acting as a pseudo guru. From Prabhupada's purport, points have been put up by Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj. He mentions that the first one is, to overcome this deceitful guru of mind, one should rigidly follow the orders of one's own guru. Prabhupada's purport mentions that as long as the mind is not engaged in meditation on Krishna, what will happen? The mind will very easily desire material enjoyments. And all the sensual images will be recorded in the mind in chronological order. And they will manifest one after another. And therefore, the living entity will have to take one body after another to experience those desires. But when the mind plans material enjoyment, then immediately the gross body has to serve the mind to arrange for that enjoyment. And therefore, he mentions that Narottam Das Thakur sings that Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aika Arana Koriya Mane Asha. And the Prabhupada says, Narottam Das Thakur is advising us that one should stick to the principle of carrying out the orders of spiritual master. One should not desire anything else. By this regulation of the mind will gradually train to desire nothing but service of Krishna. So this is the first way of how to train the mind by, Prabhupada says, by rigidly following the orders of Guru. And second is neglect the mind. Prabhupada says there is an easy weapon by which the mind can be conquered, that is neglect. The mind is always telling us to do this or that. Therefore we should be very expert in disobeying the mind's order. Gradually the mind should be trained then obey someone else's order, that is the orders of Guru. And in this way, what will happen? The mind can be controlled. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur went on to a further extent and say the mind should be beaten, not just neglected, beaten. And he mentions that before getting up in the morning, the immediately devotee should beat his mind with 100 times with shoes, I think, so far. And in the night before retiring to sleep, he should beat the mind with 100 times with broomstick. Both are easily available at home. And then the mind will be automatically controlled. So this is the thing about gurus, pseudo gurus. Hare Krishna, so we'll end here. I'm sorry if I got a little delayed. Any comments? We have some devotees, senior devotees sitting here. We don't have time for questions. We'll end here. Thank you so much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.